shiny, happy people. That is REM, of course, with a little help from the B-52s. Welcome to 1-2-3 with Mike. My special guest today, Mike LeSerf, Julie Morrissey. Pippa's here as well, of course. We're going to be chatting all things going on. Mike, of course, is the PPC in the next when we have our next vote. And he's covering Basel in East Surrey. Mike, how are you? Good to see you again.
Mike.
Right. Let's start at the very beginning. All I'm hearing at the moment is good news everywhere. The crime is down, the economy's fixed. It's got a bit stale for you. Do you think?
A little bit of scepticism with the figures that keep coming out from Tory central office. I think the figures for recorded crime is down, isn't it? But I mean, it doesn't mean that. Crime generally is down, and that's not the impression we're getting when we're talking to people on the streets. The issues around we had problems recently in Pitsea with the drinking problem. That people are getting concerned now. The lights are being switched out. That crime's going up. People don't feel safe, and I think a lot of it is about hearing people when they try and report something. How difficult it is to get through to people. How responsive things are because of the cuts, because of the low police numbers on the street. I'm not surprised that recorded crime's down, but I don't think that is the real picture for me.
And it's also a lot of different crime as well. I was listening to somebody the other day who was saying that burglaries these days are a different sort of burglary because people don't go and steal TV sets anymore. Mm. Because they can't carry them for a start, and they're virtually worthless. People are now going into homes to steal cars. There's a spate of that around my area. Yeah. But Essex police have been criticised recently for their response times and how they're dealing with crimes and unsolved crime. Their response is, well, what do you expect? You've cut us in half.
Exactly. And that's the right answer, isn't it? I mean, they've been cut by over 20% now, I think the figures, much too much to maintain a frontline service. They were always saying these cuts were going to be backroom staff, but actually you take people out of the back room, you deflect front office staff into the back room. That's the way it goes, isn't it? So there's definitely not the presence about people. Every time you talk to people about what they'd like regarding policing, they'd like to see bobbies on the beat. And that's, you know, that's what we had with the PCSOs when there was enough to cover a smaller geographic area. And our PCSOs in Brentwood are now stretched all over the place, so there's very little presence.
Morale in all three of the emergency services, the fire brigade, the police and the ambulance services, is at an all-time low. Mm. What would Labour do to A, raise morale, B, try and repair some of the services that have been cut?
Yeah, well, we've got to go in, hopefully, in 2015 and look at the state of play. We've pledged to stick to the spending in the first year, which is all you can do, really, because things are going to be set for the 2015-16 budget, and see what we can do to restore some of the services. The whole issue about cutting public service is that it might work in the short term to get a debt or a deficit down, but in the long term, it is going to cause more problems and it's going to be more expensive. So we'll have to see where we are. But restoring, decent public services across the board in all, adult social care and things like that, we've got to bringing public service back. Because I do get the impression that given another 5 years, there won't be any local council. All the public services are going to be outsourced and we'll be in real trouble.
So, you really believe that, do you?
Yeah. There's no other logical explanation to cutting local government grants year in, year out, to a point where the only option you've got is to bring in people from outside and provide those services. We see that with things as simple as potholes. They're outsourced. They're not keeping up with the work, although apparently Essex County Council's got £91 million slippage in funding. So it's not that the money hasn't been put aside for this work. It's just that the people that they contract to do it are not accountable to the public. Aren't getting the job done and they can't keep up with it. So, you've got your own people, your own public sector workers doing those sort of jobs, then people are accountable and we'll get them done.
It was brought home to me, where I live in Havering, but I was brought home to me the other day. There's a block drain near me. It means that all the rainwater goes into my garden. Been going for 3 years now. I have to keep pumping out my own garden. And a guy said, you're quite right. He said, we're going to fix it. He said, it'll be in the summer sometime. He said, I had a staff last year of 43, now I've got two.
So, I know.
That's in Havering.
After we've been on the show, we're going down to Three Arches Estate in our ward to look at the state of the road, which is full of fly tipping, it's full of potholes, it's full of litter that's been ripped open, there's builders pallets of stuff, the corners of the verges are all churned up because people are just, it's the jobs aren't getting addressed, and people are just thinking, well, they're doing it, they'll do, you know, it's a downward spiral.
Well, you've only got to look out the window here, and you can see how many bin bags are outside. I don't know what's happened. There's people are fly tipping, or it just hasn't been collected. But all these things cost money. Mike, where's this money going to come? Where are you going to get the extra funding from? Are you happy to put up council tax to cover those things?
Well, council, the whole issue around council tax has been an absolute, it has been a false economy. The hypocrisy of Brentwood Council that says that it's the right thing to freeze council tax at the same time they're putting up fees and charges for car parking, for parks and cemetery services and things like that. They're going up for people, so people are having to pay more for the services that we should be providing. Meanwhile, they sort of seem quite happy to cut council tax. This year, the leaders pledged to cut council tax. Absolutely ridiculous, because you cut it 1 year and you lose 100 grand of revenue if you cut it by a percent. That's every year, forever, you've lost that money, because even if you put it back to a freeze, you're still losing that amount every year, and you can't keep up. There's going to be, you know, a few years down the line, there's going to be a big day of reckoning. That will be the day probably when they say, we haven't got enough money to run councils, councils are going to go bankrupt, and then it's every person for themselves, and that'll be terrible.
Well, I quite agree with you. Let's talk about the economy then. Let's move on to that. Ed Balls made his statement this week, talked about the 50p tax. A lot of people are criticising that. I've had emails this morning saying, is he a busted flush? Is he a lame duck? Should he have said what he said? What's your outtake on that?
He's not a lame duck. He's not a busted flush. And he should have said what he said. And I think most of the general public are in support of the 50p tax rate. Even David Cameron said a few years ago that the 50p tax rate was going to say, so they've had a change of heart, but actually it just sends cutting the rate at a time when everybody else is starting to have to pay the bedroom tax and have their council tax benefits cuts and lots of other services, to cut the top rate and give all the millionaires a tax break. Absolutely ridiculous. And the thing about the 150 grand as well is, if you earn £200,000 a year, you will only lose an extra £2,500. That's the amount on top of the 50 grand that you'll be paying the 50p rate at. Everyone pays the same rate of income tax up and, through the scale. Yeah. So it's not, some people are saying, oh, that means I'll pay 75 grand, if I'm earning 100. It doesn't. It means you're going to pay, if you're earning 200k, you'll lose an extra couple of grand. Why is that wrong? It affects so few people as well, that cut as well, where there seems to be, the government do a good trick on people, don't they? They get people that are never going to earn that sort of money to actually defend the tax cuts for the rich and their Bullingdon gang.
When the economy crashed, when Labour came out of power last time, the Tories were very quick to blame your policies, to say that it was all your fault. You were quick to say that it was a world economy. It was just circumstances. Things have got a bit better very recently. What are you saying now? Are you blaming? Well, not blaming, not the wrong way. Are you saying, well, the world economy is going back up as well? It's not just Britain.
Well, there's a slight upturn, isn't there, in the economy? But at the time, when we left power, the debt was less than when we went into power. That was one thing. There was a global financial banking crisis, and what happened was we went through a leadership election that summer, and it let the opposition, sort of steal a march. Well, the Tories steal a march on getting that message there that it was Labour's mess, and it wasn't. The economy might be on a slight upturn, but it's on the backs of people that are. Their wages haven't gone up. Yesterday, they was interviewing lots of people on the factory floor saying, oh, the business is building, it's great. Our jobs are slightly more secure. And they asked three people consecutively, how did that affect their money? They said, oh, no, it hasn't put our wages up at all. So the economy might be growing, but people are still having pay freezes or below inflation increases. So people are still worse off.
Okay, right. Let's just take a quick break and back in a second. Talking something I want to talk about national, and I'm going to ask Pippa this question because what I fear, and Mike will agree with me, I'm sure, it's been getting worse, and that is turnout, people not voting. Pippa, you're 21, aren't you?
Yes.
I want to ask you, and I haven't prepared you for this at all.
Here we go. Fingers crossed.
Are you going to vote next time?
Oh yes, definitely.
Well, that's good to hear. And why do you think it's important for you to vote?
Well, I think the story that I've had drilled into me that, the reason it's important to vote is the, all the suffragettes and all the rest of it, all the campaign for women's votes, nearly a century ago now, really. And, I've had that story drilled into me by my mother since since as far back as I can remember. So
doesn't that warm the cockles of your heart, Mike?
Really,
that's
does.
Brilliant. It is, and it's the whole sort of history of suffrage. And you know, 150 years ago, it was only, you know, rich men that were allowed to vote, and landowners.
Yeah.
And it's been a long, long battle by the working classes and women to get the vote. And
yeah, I mean, we neither of us know what she's going to vote, but the fact that she is going to vote,
that's brilliant,
is really good.
Absolutely.
As you say, because there is so much history involved.
Absolutely. Everything is political. People do get turned off by party politics, and that's something politicians have got to get their head around. But actually, everything in life, there's a reason for it, and that's something political's happened, isn't it? We're talking about the economy, but it's absolutely everything. It's got a political angle to it.
Do you read in horror some of the things that go on at Westminster, though? You know, the expenses scandals and the, you know, it still seems to be going on. Do you should you get to Westminster, do you think, I'm not going to be like that? I'm absolutely going to be a man of the people and not, you know, get a reputation like some of them have got.
Sure. I mean, I'm delighted to be a working class Essex boy that's got to stand in a seat, you know, right next door to the, you know, where I've lived all my life. But local working class candidates are few and far between in all parties, and there seems to be, you know, disproportionately an element of people that know people that get on. And I mean, that's obviously what happens, isn't it? If you're in that circle, that's why, you know, we need to do things about wages and unpaid interns and things like that, and give people a chance from all walks of life to get into politics. Because once you get in there and see how exciting it is every week, and go to your local council chamber and watch local councillors ripping it out of each other, you soon get the bug and you know, get involved in local politics.
One criticism of all three parties at the moment, the three main parties, is that you're too similar. You're too. Mm. So there's not that much you can. I'm using my hands here, which is useless on radio.
I had a haircut today; that was useless as well.
Me too. But you know what I'm trying to say is that there used to be vast differences, and now you're not that far apart. Who's phone key? Isn't it? You keep buzzing, Julia.
Sorry.
I'm telling you, what? It's still going. Put it on silent. Thank
it
you.
Is on silent.
Yeah, you're still giving a signal. Put it on aircraft mode. That's what it.
Sit on it. That often works.
She's a tweeterer. That's what I'm trying to say. The distance between the right and the left is narrowed, I feel. Would you agree with that, or do you think it's not the same?
I mean, there's always an element that you've got to appeal to. You know, you've got to base yourself in the centre ground, and whether you're centre-left politician or centre-right in Westminster, there's going to be that sort of feel about a lot, you know, about policy. But when you get on the ground, I mean, the local Conservative Party could not be more different from the local Labour Party. Mm. And we've got the policies like the 50p, you know, where there are clear dividing lines, scrapping the bedroom tax. But we've got to get that message across. You know, it's no good. We've got to make sure people know what the differences are. There are differences. If you look at it on the surface, I'm sure you'd see, you know, a lot of men mainly in suits in Westminster all talking the same sort of language. But on the ground, there are definite differences.
All parties have fallen over themselves this morning about the programme to take in vulnerable Syrians. Some people calling it's gone backwards on what you said earlier, but Theresa May has just said that the scheme will be run in addition to existing programmes, and I mean, that's obviously a good thing.
Yeah, but the pressure, Mike, they didn't want to do that, did they? They were saying they weren't going to take anyone, and that was a clear dividing line. It's only the pressure from the other parties, from us and the Lib Dems, that force their hand, and they're doing a lot of things like that to make, you know, to, after they've had the time to, you know, a bit of common sense has come into play. They got all mixed up with that UKIP anti-immigration issue and started blurring the boundaries between people that are seeking asylum and refugees and economic migrants. It all, you know, they're all worried about Nigel Farage. So that's what went wrong there. But I'm glad that they're talking, you know, we are going to be taking some people, but it's, you know, they've had to have been dragged in, kicking and screaming to do it.
You mentioned Nigel Farage. Who is worried about Nigel Farage? Are Labour worried about him, or should the Tories be worried about him?
Well, they're a party that are going to do well, aren't they, in the local election, Euro election. So as it's on the same day, they'll probably do well in the locals as well. But what we're seeing from the Conservatives is actually, you know, really trying to get tough on migrants, all the talk about coming out of the EU and the referendum, trying to keep controls on Bulgarian Romanians coming in, even though the 7 years has passed and everyone in Europe's got the free right to travel. There are more expats, as we call it. We don't call them. We're not my immigrants, are we? We're expats when we go and live in Spain.
Yeah.
There's more British expats in Spain than there are from the whole of the rest of the EU in the UK. So if you want to talk that language of people going back to their country of origin, we'd have net more people here anyway. So,
do you think we're coping as well? You know, this influx of immigration we've just discussed? For example, the hospitals. You know, again, I was at Queen's in Romford the other day. Mm-hmm. 13 ambulances sitting outside waiting to get in on a Monday morning. They've got 86 beds there, I think, in the A&E, and there was 130 people waiting to be seen. King George's A&E closing. You know, we've had closures here. Orsett closed their A&E, and now Basildon seems to be struggling as well. And then coming up in bad reports, the hospital's getting bad marks, and the poor hospital doing their opinion, they're doing their very best.
They are doing their best, and the staff are. And then there starts to be an attack on, again, on public sector workers that are, you know, not pulling their weight. But the actual, you know, it's capacity. That's all about the cuts as well. But don't blame people that come to work here. Well, you know, Boris Johnson, Cameron, or was it Osborne, just went over to China and begging the Chinese to come over and trying to relax their visas so to make it easier for Chinese to set up businesses, and rightly so. So, you know, that's a hypocrisy as well. We have to tackle the lack of housing, and we know that's across the board. The last 30, 40 years, we haven't built enough houses for people, and we need to tackle unscrupulous employers that are willing to pay less than the minimum wage and to put people up in substandard accommodation. Make the level playing field flat, and then we'll be okay.
Okay, Julian, desperate to say something.
I was just going to say, I was listening to, I can't remember if it was a radio station or on the TV, it was Emergency Services Week last week, wasn't it? And there was a load of programmes about it. And one of the ambulance drivers, she said she got a call for an ambulance to come out because a lady had broken her nail. So she called an ambulance out. So I would say it isn't just about the amount of people in A&E, it's why they go to A&E. And they then block, you know, there's then maybe 120 people sitting in A&E. Could 40 of those have gone to see their doctor, or maybe gone to the chemist, or the
exactly.
Or the beauticians.
I'm going to tell you a very, very quick short story. I was waiting with my mother in A&E the other day. We weren't in any tearing hurry.
No.
She had a massive heart rate, but never mind. A&E was packed in. A young lady was there with her daughter, same age as my daughter, to be honest. And, you know, parent, you know, when you're a parent,
yes,
you know,
you worry.
You worry. Mm. And she was at the window saying, well, my daughter's constipated. She said, right, okay, have you been to your doctor?
Absolutely.
No. Have you done it? No. And she took up 10 minutes of the triage nurse's time. And during that time, another lady came in, absolutely screaming in agony. You could say, it turns out she had an 18-inch stone in her kidney. No wonder she was in agony.
Absolutely,
So this, you know, this lady, I know she's trying to do her best for her daughter, but she took up time. A nurse was telling us they had last week somebody come in there, ask, go to A&E for some E15 cream. You know, and you just, you know, you just wonder, you know, you know, I was 32 years as a fire officer, and the things we used to get called out for
as well.
You know, the public do need educating, and the health service are trying to educate people about when to call A&E, and sometimes the message isn't getting through.
No.
It's also about GPs. GPs do get away with being open very, you know, luxurious hours. They need to be open longer so that people can access their GP. Polyclinics won't see children under 3, I think. They have to go to hospital. If their child is running a temperature out of hours, they've got to go to hospital. They know they're blocking an A&E service, but they can't see their GP because their GP is closed after 7. GPs need to offer a more flexible service that's of this day and age and not how it used to run.
Okay, right. I'm just going to take a quick break for the news headlines and then back more. I want to talk more with you.
Oh, dear.
And more with both of you.
It's always that look in his eye. It's always scary.
I know. I want to talk a little bit about, dare I say the word, WHW.
Phoenix FM Travel News, in association with the Beaches Care and Nursing Home, London Road, Brentwood.
Right, let's just check out the travel for you. It's just disappeared off my screen, but let me just bring it up for you. Is it going to work? Yeah, it should work. Not too bad at the moment. Let me tell you about some lying water that I came through around Wigley Bush Lane. There is a massive puddle there. You can get through it. I went rather quickly. but more to the point, down in Brentwood, as you're coming down the high street towards Brook Street, we've got slow traffic there. This is because of the ongoing gas main. I think it's gas main they're doing there. That's causing you about delays of about 10 minutes to get through coming down the hill at the moment down towards the M25. Otherwise, looking around, it's not too bad at the moment. Very slow, though, as you go past the Corringham roundabouts, the A13, because of the ongoing roadworks there, and slow in the roadworks on the M25 as you go around between the A10 and Waltham Abbey turnoff.
The Beaches Care and Nursing Home, London Road, Brentwood. Exceptional care, exceptionally affordable.
Hitting the headlines first for your area. This is Phoenix FM.
These are the top stories at 1:30. A coroner has criticised the manufacturer of an ejector seat for failing to warn the RAF of defects which contributed to the death of a Red Arrows pilot. Flight Lieutenant Sean Cunningham, seat activated on the ground in 2011, but his parachute didn't deploy properly. The Home Secretary has confirmed the government's launching a programme to take in vulnerable Syrians. Hundreds are expected to be resettled in the UK in the next year. The Bank of England governors outlining the future of the pound in Scotland if the country chooses to split from the UK. Mark Carney's giving a speech in Brentwood, in Edinburgh, warning, it wouldn't be in Brentwood, warning about the problems of having a single currency shared between two independent nations. Police investigating the disappearance of Madeleine McCann 7 years ago have flown back to Portugal. They want help from local detectives to arrest three suspects in the case. Supermarket boss Justin King has been hailed as the saviour of Sainsbury's following his announcement he's stepping down as chief executive after 10 years. He's brushed off speculation, long-standing rumours that he'll be offered a role in charge of Formula One. These are the headlines. We'll have full stories at 2 o'clock.
This is Phoenix FM.
Indeed. Talking to Mike Lesurf and Julie and Pippa. Mike, let's just quickly, something that was in the news there. Scotland, should they opt out? Should they stay with us? What was your opinion on that?
I think we should stay in the as a union, as a Great Britain. I'm English, I'm British, I'm European. I don't see the benefits in them coming out. So yeah, I hope people will vote no to leave.
And there's lots of disparities, isn't there? And the Welsh and I think and the Scottish both get free prescriptions, and we don't in England. I thought we were all in the same thing. How does that happen? And
yeah, I suppose when the governments were devolved, I suppose they took on responsibility for a lot of issues like that. But just the bigger picture, I don't see the benefit for anyone in the UK in them coming out. The argument to just be independent, maybe, you know, to lose the pound, to have to try and get back in the EU once they come out, to go to the, you know, what would the currency be? I mean, it's all, you know, big economic stuff, isn't it? But really, why?
Yeah. You know. Okay, Julian, I'll ask you both this, actually. I've tried to avoid this because we seem to have talked this subject to death almost, but William Hunterway has reared its ugly head again. Keith Parker was in a few weeks ago with me, and we talked about it for an hour. You've spoken about it before. But there's been more revelations last week that there was another plan, apparently. What do we know about that?
Well, there was another plan, apparently.
There has been for a while.
Which we weren't told about in opposition. No one had let us know that. In fact, it had been denied when asked in council chamber. That had been denied. Mm. So that was a revelation. We had quite an interesting meeting the other night.
With the representatives. Yeah, and when you say flogged to death, I mean, it is the, you know, it's Brentwood's equivalent of the dead parrot sketch coming back and coming back year after year to the town. You know, you're holding up a cage with a dead project and say, you know, giving it a little tap and saying, no, there's still life in it. Yeah, it's incredible. We found out last week when we had a meeting that the extended deadline, which was an extended deadline, has now been extended even further. And to cap it all, we were always told that the final decision on William Hunterway would be made in the council chamber by the elected members, and the Conservative administration have delegated those powers now to the managing director. So an unelected officer of the council is now going to decide whether William Hunterway goes ahead or not. It's an absolute disgrace on many levels. The thing is, take it back to the drawing board, we'll have to go through a procurement, which will take a long while.
Which
another
you didn't
couple of
before.
Which we didn't before. We
didn't,
just it was
didn't
just
go
cho-
out to
you
tender
know.
Before. It was one person.
Yeah, that's
one
it.
Developer.
Stockland were that was it. Yeah. We all want a cinema. We all want a cinema, but we don't want a cinema on any terms. It's been farcical. They, you know, they've had the opportunity three or four times now. For some reason, there's probably more that we don't know. Finding out what we found out last week.
Sure.
But why would you do it? You know, why carry on with it?
I think the thing is as well, most residents see that development as cinema. Well, it isn't. It's the cinema's tiny percentage, isn't it, of that development. It's retail and car park. So people say, oh, but you, that means you don't want a cinema in the town. Cinema's it's a tiny percentage of that development. And that development is so dated now. It was dated then. It's so dated now. It needs a total revamp. It's just not good.
Okay, and it's going to drag on and on, isn't it?
Mm. We're not going to see it. Will. Yeah. We can walk away any time, Mike. We can say now, enough is enough. Mm. As long as we've got reasonable
grounds
to do so, which we have, because it's gone on for 7 years and it hasn't got anywhere. I mean, that's grounds enough, isn't it? But we don't even own all the land yet. We still don't have the Barclays car park. Okay. We've still got deals to do with Sainsbury's that haven't been done. They'll probably, you know, come back at the 11th hour and want, you know what they will see as rightly theirs. Terrible.
Okay, one more question. We're not going to talk about it. Right, you mustn't mention William Hunterway. What else is what's the hot gossip at the moment in Brentwood Council?
In Brentwood Council?
Brentwood Council, yeah.
Constitution's causing us massive consternation. It's just sometimes it feels like there's one rule for one team, which is the opposition, and there's another rule for the people in administration. You'll be sitting in a meeting, you're told you can't speak. The next meeting, you're in a similar position, or the opposition in a similar position, and then you're told you can speak. It's like shifting sands, the Constitution, and it needs. We are grappling with it, but it's completely mysterious to us all.
Gross hypocrisy, a dictatorial style that the leader has in running things, so trying to take debate out of the council chamber. You've got sort of structure. The MD, she's come from a borough where there's 100% Labour councillors, there's no opposition, so obviously things can get decided and then brought to the chamber and be done relatively quickly. In our council, we've got four parties. The council chamber is the place where you have democratic debate and you have ding-dongs and you can go until one in the morning. If you've got something to say, you should be allowed to say it. All that's been swept away. They want to make the decisions behind closed doors between them and then come in and tell us how it's going to be. Hence the issues I've had with people, you know, complaints. I had the press phone up today about complaints and behaviour. I can understand the frustrations of any opposition councillor in Brentwood Borough Council that they're having their democratic rights curtailed and the public are losing out.
Okay, I've been in Thurrock all morning. I interviewed Graham Farrant, who's the Chief Executive Officer. I interviewed John Kent, who's the leader of the Labour Council. Mm-hmm. Prince Charles was there this morning and Camilla, the Duchess. They're looking round Charles is the patron saint of the Royal Opera House. Royal Opera House is open in Thurrock, and everybody's, you know, it's a wonderful achievement for the borough in Thurrock. Are very, very proud, and quite rightly so that everything that's gone on there, because that site was a complete and utter waste of space and dump, etc. Now it's a fantastic.
I'm very sure jealous.
You've been. What's Brentwood got to be proud of at the moment?
that's a good question.
We've got an awful lot of natural ponds occurring in Brentwood, which we're really proud of. We're thinking of doing a tour all around the natural ponds, pointing out the fishing opportunities, the picnic opportunities. Fabulous ponds.
It's a good question, because at the phone, we're going down to Hawthorne Avenue after this, because a few residents have phoned up. They've lived on that estate. It's a nearly 60-year-old estate. Some have been there for moved into the first few houses that were built. They are heartbroken and embarrassed about the condition. The council will say they're protecting frontline services and they're not, and Brentwood is going downhill fast. So you'd be hard pushed to answer that question at the moment.
Okay,
right?
Pippa, I'm going to bring you in here now. You've got a possible Labour MP sitting across from you. What do you want to say to him? Have you got any questions you'd like to ask him?
You're going to have to cut me some slack, because I'm not political person.
That's
not
fine.
You've
impressed us by voting.
Okay, here we go. All right, well, I'm going to go on the subject. It's actually more of a national Labour thing, this one. Okay. But students.
Mm-hmm.
$9,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of the lucky ones on 3.5. But I'm looking at some of my friends who are second years, first years, they're all saying it, they're not liking that perspective of nearly about be about 50 grand.
Sure.
I was actually wondering what is actually happening, what's planning to change on the student, to the student perspective, if Labour should come in.
Yeah, you're right. It's absolutely disgraceful, number one, that the fees are £9,000, and that put my daughter off going to university as well. It's it's really frightening, isn't it? Although there's, you have to pay it back after you earn, I think it's over £20,000. Hopefully, hopefully, yeah, it's not me either.
It's probably me.
It's crackling. Sorry, right. Sorry, someone's phone's doing something.
Sorry.
Yeah. And, if you finish, graduate from university, hopefully you would be going into a job that was earning that anyway. It's terrible. I mean, I remember, and tuition fees were brought in originally by the Labour government of just over £3,000. At the time, I was against it. In 2005, I was the agent for our parliamentary candidate in Brentwood, so the person that sort of organised their campaign. And because we were about to bring in tuition fees, we had a candidate who, £3,000 now seems, acceptable. At the time, it caused a real outrage because it was free, and it's from my heart, it should be free. I think we should be paying for people's education, the people that are going to be our doctors and nurses and, lifesavers.
I can understand why tuition fees were brought in the first place. Beforehand, it was very sort of only the rich, only the exceedingly talented. No one with a disability or anything like that. Because I'm dyslexic, had I been born sort of 10, 15 years ago, there would have been no way I would have been able to go to university. Yeah. So the three and a half grand, whatever it was, I can actually see how that works, and in a way that has kind of allowed me to actually be able to go to uni,
sure,
which is brilliant.
Yeah,
but still, it's just a scary thought of that nine grand. Is that actually justifiable?
Well, it's not, is it? And again, we'd made so much effort to try and support people to go to university, and the figure when I left school at 16, and it was a very small amount of people that stayed on to 18, let alone went to university. And it was great that the aspiration of the last Labour government was for more people to go to uni. But I mean, it's a massive topic. I mean, the reason the Lib Dems done so well in the last election was the pledge to abolish tuition fees, and they pledged that they would never vote for an increase in tuition fees if they got into government. And then they got into government, and what they've done, making up the numbers of the with the Conservatives for a majority, is actually push through that policy that they said they would never entertain. So a lot of what's happened regarding tuition fees is down to the Liberal Democrats doing a U-turn, and a lot of Liberal Democrats, especially in university towns, Cambridge has got a Lib Dem MP because of that pledge to scrap tuition fees, and total U-turn. So I hope, we do want to cut university tuition fees, and hopefully, that's what I'll be, if I get elected, that will be my stance. I didn't want to, see them in the first place, but like you say, there are, there were reasons to try and get more people to uni and support people. So, yeah, another dividing line, Mike. Absolutely. I don't think the Tories are going to cut the tuition fees.
Okay, we'll come back to that in just a moment.
Hey, have you seen what's going on at the White Horse, Coxty Green Road, Brentwood? Apart from having 10 real ales on draft and a great menu, they hold quiz nights, live band and comedy nights, open mic nights and much, much more. Larger events are staged in the White Horse Marquee throughout the year. Check the events guide at phoenixfm.com for details or phone Brentwood 372 410 for details and bookings. For a great night out, it's the White Horse, of course.
Join me, Mel Watson, every Wednesday evening, 7 till 8 on Phoenix 98 FM. Each week, I'll be chatting to an expert about how you can change your body for the better. From cosmetic surgery to karate, from Reiki to reflexology, whether it's an alternative therapy or doctor's advice you need, you'll find it all in Body Talk, the show that could change your life. Brought to you in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital.
Phoenix FM.
Indeed, just coming out to call to two, it's Mike with Mike and Julie and Pepper. Mike, let's talk about the dreaded personalities thing, because it shouldn't be, but I'm afraid it is. A lot of people vote on personalities. We had the with the last person, you know, if Neil Kinnock gets in, etc., turn off the light, and that really did cost Labour the election back in, was that 97? No, before that, no. 92. Have you got the right people at the top now? Ed Ball's has come in for some criticism recently. So has your leader. Are you, as a Labour candidate, happy with who you've got in power at the moment? Are you strong enough?
Yeah, I think we are, and I'm very happy. We hear those criticisms as well. When I talk to people on the doorstep, and there's, you know, there's say, oh, we'd seen Ed Miliband on TV, and wasn't that impressed. I hope it's not going to be about personality. Some of it will be, and there are going to be leader debates and things like that.
Yeah.
When you meet Ed Miliband and you see him on the street and you see him jump up on the soapbox and talk to people, when you see him knocking on doors, he's great. He's great with people. He's friendly. He's funny. He's very, he's very charming guy. And for some people, that is not coming across on telly, which is where most people are going to see him. But I really do hope it's not about, you know, that side of it, whether it's, you know, the way you speak or whatever, you know, the Wallace and Gromit thing, you know, that's amusing, but shouldn't have nothing to do with who you vote. So I'm delighted because you know, it's policy driven. What's driving me. I know the only chance people have got after 2015 is if there's a Labour government, because if they get back in by 2020, we'll be stuffed, to use a
okay.
nice down to earth phrase.
Okay, while you're door knocking at the moment, what are people saying to you?
Yeah, well, it's a lot about the sort of struggle that people are under. We've been talking to people, giving out information about, you know, my candidacy, but we've been also doing a cost of living survey and asking people to fill them in and let us know the specific sort of areas that people are struggling with. And we're getting quite a lot back, so you know things are bad when you get a good percentage of surveys return, that people are feeling the pinch, petrol prices, shopping, all those basic stuff you cannot avoid, they're going up all the time. So we need to make sure that we look at that across the board, and just make sure that people know that we are on their side. I work part-time in London. I struggle when prices go up. I've had a pay freeze for the last couple of years and a 1% rise this year. I know what it's like. My fares went up the other day. So, you know, we've got to work with people and not tell people that things are on the up and we're all in it together. I mean, that phrase is just so, you know, ridiculous. It's untrue.
I've got a question from Greg on via Twitter. How come uni is free in Scotland and not in England, by the way?
Yeah, because they made the right decision. Basically, it should be. Even if people could struggle to afford it, it puts people off.
HCA member, whoever that is, on Twitter again says, Tory secrets touched on again regarding William Hunter Way. I wasn't going to mention that, okay. And plenty of secrets surrounding HCC. I don't know what that means. The need exposure. Hutton Community Centre, of course
that's
it does.
The Hutton Community Association.
And that's your phone. I can hear it from here. Mine is off, so it's your fault. Who's not on aircraft mode? Is that you, Pippa?
I'm on
aircraft. Mine's on aircraft mode in my pocket.
Okay. It might be you.
Sorry. Oh, dear.
That's about. We'll be all right.
What does HCA member say? Secrets.
Plenty of secrets surrounding Hutton Community Centre that needs exposing as well. HCA member. I'm not sure who that is, is that a valid point?
Yeah. I think so. I think there's. I think there needs to be a light shone on the process for the Hutton Community Centre. I was involved with that right from the start, and I've never been happy with what's happened down there.
Taking £165,000 out of the public purse, that's the whole of the borough, for every resident, and throwing it, this is the administration, the leader of the council, deciding to throw that into a specific pet project in their area. You know, wasn't on at all.
When it wasn't necessary.
In our ward, we've got the Knights Way Centre now, fabulous resource for people, but for many years that building was shut. There never was a time when the Conservatives said, oh, why don't you have £150,000 towards the renovation, the rebuilding of that hall that's in your ward, Brentwood South, the Labour ward. And that was funded by East of England Development Fund money, Labour money, Sure Start money, and the hard work of the local people had to get that money together. But if it's in Hutton, have some of the public purse.
Okay, right. No, I just want to go back. We haven't got much time. Just got a couple of national issues. I think a lot of people's fear, or social commentators have made, is that the fear with Labour is that you go back to the days where you had massive quangos, that you spend. We had education. You put so much money into education, and they fear that you overspent and that money was wasted. How can you assure the voter today that the Labour of 2015 isn't going to be the Labour of 1997?
Yeah, things are different, but I'd go back. You know, I wouldn't actually. The premise of that is that we wasn't right in 1997 what we were doing, and we were because we bought in Short Start, National Minimum Wage, and things like that. I think we are a party, and we are all for a smaller central government and handing powers down to a local level. But our localism means strong local governance and strong local councils and people in a locality. I'm an elected member, Julie's an elected member. We are members of the public that are asked to keep an eye and look after the finances, and you know, we are those people. Those people are necessary, and what I'm worried about is that the Tories' idea of localism is every person for themselves. If you've got the money to pay for it, you're fine, because you can afford the parking charges. You can buy the problem with your house if you need it. Get, you know, a step away from public service. Labour, we respect public service, and we respect people that work in public service to make sure that we're all looked after. And that really, for me, public service is freedom, because that means that everybody can get on and do and live the lives that they want to do. We've got the police, so we know people are safe. We've got the doctors and the nurses, so we know that if we're ill, then we all get helped the same. That creates freedom, not a free-for-all, strong, you know, survival of the fittest mentality. So hopefully we've got to get that message across, but we must look after our councils. Our councils are imperative to that localism, but our council is going out the window.
With gritted teeth, I'm going to mention the dreaded words, Dartford Crossing. I heard this morning, and this is from Chief Executive of Thurrock Council, that the cameras are going to be in operation in October 2014. These are the cameras on the same system of the congestion. And we've now got to have four lanes going southbound from Essex to Kent. We're going to have four lanes going over, no stopping, picture taken, away you go, no problem. Coming the other way from Kent into Essex, the right-hand bore tunnel, the east tunnel, is larger than the west tunnel.
All right.
So the lorries are going to go in what is now cars only. They're going to go over there, and cars are going to go over there. So somehow traffic, lorries were going to be on the larger vehicles are going to be on the left. Will be now, once they get to that area, are going to have to somehow cross over. It's
right. Well, I'm not sure I forgot all of that, Mike, but that was
the lorries are going to have to cross over
because they'll be that sounds awkward. I can't. I mean, the whole thing about the crossing is it's great that the barriers are going up and there'll be a system of cars being able to go straight through, because we are convinced that is going to help alleviate a lot of the issues that are currently happening before we decide on crossings. But the crossing decision looks very precarious now because of the just down to A and C,
But was there really a B and a D? Was that just fiction or an E? We talked about ferries and can be. I honestly believe in it, and this is only my opinion, that they were just stuck there.
Throw in a few. What they did with the town hall when they wanted to knock that down. They threw in a few options that you pick the best of the worst, don't you? And then think, oh, I've got a result, and realise that's been their aim all along. A crossing, well, option C specifically, but A or C, but a crossing that cuts through all sit and picks up the M25.
It's a disaster for the whole of Thurrock, isn't it?
It is. It's horrible. It's a horrible thought. The D thing, it was on the table years ago, wasn't it, in a previous consultation? But let's get the barriers up. Let's see what happens here. Have a look at, the infrastructure. I mean, me and Polly Billington, the PPC and Thurrock, are meeting with Mary Cray in March to talk about the infrastructure of the east of England and our area in particular. But it's got to be a bigger picture, isn't it, than just a bridge across the river, because residents that live in East Tilbury and Stanford know what it's like already before the port's at full capacity. You know, it's not going to get any easier.
you're on a massive learning curve at the moment. You've not really done this before. Like, you're an experienced counsellor. You've not obviously stood before. How are you enjoying it? Are you finding it tough, or is it too time consuming? Or
it's not too. It's very time consuming. It's like 24/7 a lot of it, and I work, you know, three days a week in London as well. I did stand in Railing Whitford before. It wasn't as intense a campaign. This is a seat that we will be expecting to win. You know, one of three Essex seats. But I'm loving it. I mean, I've got to know so many people. We've got involved in so many groups. I did compared a quiz night last Saturday for the Green Action Group that's set up in Basildon to fight a massive development that's going on there. Just offering, you know, I want to get to know people. I want them to get to know me. But also want to support local things that are going on, as well as the national stuff and the policies that we'll be campaigning on. I want to know what's going on locally on the ground as well. We've got involved in the Fellmore's issue around the safety of the council properties there. Been working with the local councillors in East Thurrock and in Basildon, who are great. You know, we're building up a game. Plus, we get a lot of support off of ex-Tories as well. We've got a few ex-Tories in our camp that are more than happy to see me as a candidate and as a Labour candidate doing well. So that's really helpful.
Okay. you're standing in one of the most hotly fought seats in the county, in the country, your predecessor Angela, for Polly it's Andrew McKinley, who, you know, strong Labour people.
Yeah.
What are you saying? Well, give me two questions that Basildon men are asking you, what are they asking you, and what's the two messages that you want to get across to them? That why should they vote for you in the next election?
Right. Well, number one, I mean, the whole crux of the campaign that I'm running is about a level playing field for people. I want people that live in South Basildon and East Thurrock to be as respected as other people around the country. And I see a lot of things that happen in the South Basildon and East Thurrock that are not necessarily to the benefit of local people. So I want them to know that they've got a voice in Parliament that's going to speak up for them specifically. And the other thing is, I'm an Essex boy. I've been, you know, I was born and raised and lived in Essex all my life. I know what it's like. I've got the accent. I went to school in Romford. I went to college in Colchester when I was doing my catering, sitting in guilds, Southend, love it. You know, when there used to be a big bowling alley down on the pier and things like
that.
Yeah,
we lost that one. Sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah. But that's it. I'm an Essex guy, and hopefully people will want a local representing them in Parliament.
Michael, we're going to ask you to come back in the studio in the very near future, and hopefully Stephen Metcalfe will come in with you and we'll have a debate between the two of you.
He has refused to debate with me so far, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, well, I shall ask him. And again, I know Stephen and I respect him. I think he respects me, and he will hopefully give me a nice answer and come in.
That'd be great.
Look forward to it. Final question, Tottenham Manchester City tonight, prediction.
Oh, well, hopefully we can overturn that thrashing we got. I've blocked it out of my brain. It was either 4-5 or 6-0. I can't remember. But hopefully. Oh, no, we'll get a result tonight, Mike. We'll get our own back.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. Julie, thank you very much for coming
thank
in today.
You,
I know we spoke about money tonight. And Pippa, thank you very much for your input as well.
Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you very much. And we'll see you in the very near future.
Cheers.
There's so much more to talk about. And it's all great stuff. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.